League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Yeah, today was a really interesting episode. My friend John Curran, who is the state manager for Favorite Brands Distribution Company, and Alan Denny joins us back on the show to talk about the middle tier and the why do people hate the middle tier so much? What the frustration is from the side of the retail store, from the consumer, rumors about how allocations work, inducements, which we'll explain a little bit about that. You know, I kind of covered it a little bit. I kind of ran at the beginning of the episode, which I may repeat some of this, but I'm going to do it anyways because it's important to understand. I work, as you know, full disclosure, I do a lot of work with brands for my whiskey festival, and I do a lot of work with distributors. They, I'm thankful for them. They've been very good to me as a consumer. I've been kind of outside this three-tier system for the past 4 years, where I don't have to deal with a lot of the being a victim from some of the frustrating things, but I do see them. And these conversations happen all the time. For years, everything was separate. For since the beginning of the whole three-tier system and how it works, everything was separate. Essentially, the way the three-tier system works in Texas, and I do want this part left in for when we get into it, a distillery sells to a distributor at a state level. The distributor sells to liquor stores. They have to go through all three tiers. And then the liquor stores send it out to restaurants, bars, and you know, sells to consumers. We get into the idea of how allocations work, and we get into the idea of you know, some of the shady shenanigans that happens with something called inducements. Inducements are, if you want this highly valuable, sought-after bottle that I only have a few bottles of, you have to buy all of this, which is extremely immoral and it's extremely illegal to force a store to buy a bunch of products that they don't want in order to get the product that, you know, that sells. But it happens. There's workarounds, legal gray areas. And it's not the official stance of any of these companies. And I love RNDC. I love Glazier's. I have no issue with them. And I am going to tell you, if you are a member of the distributing tier, that we're in a new age of information because of the internet. And where in the past these things weren't talked about, they're now being talked about. And they've been talked about long before Houston Bourbon Society. They've been talked about long before I came in the picture. And because of the dissemination of information, the age that we live in with whiskey and Facebook, the secrets of how things work have been getting out for quite some time on a national level. So if you're new to the Facebook world of whiskey and your first experience is some post that's letting secrets out or slinging mud in Houston Bourbon Society, then don't blame the group. But also, don't get upset. It's happening. This is never going to go away. Things are far more transparent now than they ever have been. And the only thing I want to do is simply have an honest discussion with the distributor, a friend of mine, that's not incriminating to him or any other distributor, and just kind of explain how these things work, why people are frustrated, and kind of just understand each other better. He says at one point, like, we're painted as like this bad guys to many, and there's reasons for that. If you are uncomfortable with some of the things that are stated that happen, then simply do your best to prevent it from happening. We live in an age of being called out for anything that shouldn't be done anymore. I can bring up all kinds of examples with the Hollywood right now. There's no hiding anymore when it comes to these things. So have an honest conversation. Do your best to hold your salespeople accountable. And don't punish stores for expressing their frustrations or being honest. It's not going to stop. I feel like I'm being awfully dramatic, and it's not my intent, but it is important that we have this conversation because I know that he was nervous about coming on. I wasn't planning on trapping him or anything, but we just wanted to have an honest conversation. So this episode is sponsored by Barrel, Compass Box, and El Dorado Rum. We were lucky enough to kind of sit down and have a few drinks and not give these people a huge plug, but honestly, some of my favorite products on the table. We had a recent episode with Compass Box's Karen Igalka, a recent episode with the National Director from Barrel, Will Schragas. So if you haven't seen those episodes, definitely go back and revisit them. And we got to drink a little rum on the show, which, you know, me personally, I'm a huge fan. So huge fan of rum. Thank you so much for just watching the show, for putting up some of the shenanigans that happens. Please don't take it too strongly. You know, we're in a beautiful time when it comes to this hobby, and it's only going to continue to flourish. So without further ado, John Curran from Favorite Brands and Alan Denny from EP Carrillo Cigars, cheers.
This is something I found, like I said, I told you earlier, in my grandparents' house. It's an old bottle of ancient age that you determined was what, from the 80s?
Yeah, so from what I can tell, it's got a barcode, but no pregnancy warning on it. So it's between 86 and 90.
And this is just one of those cool things, like it's just good to drink. I mean, it's not anything special, it's just, you know, it's...
Nice bourbon?
Yeah, a very inexpensive bottle, but it's a good bourbon.
There's a lot of great bourbon out there that's inexpensive. Last night we went to a cigar lounge with with Matt Phillips, the guy who officially started HBS, and he brought in an old paper Weller that he picked up at an estate sale for $20.
Nice.
And that bottle now would be $700.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean these old spirits are really starting to pop up a lot more, and you're seeing them in other states where, you know, regulations aren't as strict as they are here. You're seeing people selling them, you know, on their retail shelves. You go into
Not supposed to do that.
Yeah. Well, you go into New York and they have them all over the retail shelves.
Yeah.
I'm saying in Texas you don't see them
right
at all.
And I know Kentucky's got that that new rule. I want to move this forward a little bit. Just tell me if you can hear me. Is that better? Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just unfortunate for some of the law. Every state has different laws, and it all comes down to, you know, where the state changed their laws and what the transparency is there. But, you know, it's unfortunate we can't get this kind of stuff here because there's plenty of it available. I mean, I have people coming to me all the time that have old stocks of this, that, and the other, and they want to sell it to you.
Well, it's so weird talking about stuff like that because I was in Southern Illinois last week and got to talking about bourbon. I'm in a cigar shop doing a small event, and they were amazed that we get regular Buffalo Trace.
Yeah, because that's on allocation.
they've never seen a Weller Antique. They've never seen a Weller 12 there.
And which state is this?
Illinois.
I mean, Illinois is a fairly large state when it comes to – when you look at overall sales in states, it's usually New York, California, Florida, Texas, Illinois, then Colorado. Those are generally the ones, as far as suppliers go, are the large states.
Yeah, and so in Southern Illinois, literally just – 5 miles outside of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. So it's still a large metropolitan area.
But Chicago is Illinois.
Yeah. But they don't get...
But is it though?
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the sales terms what Illinois is, it's Chicago.
Yeah. So they... one of the guys left and he goes, man, I'm going to go to the liquor store. I'm going to see what they have. And like, no Eagle Rare. We were talking about Blanton's. And I was like, yeah, we got Eagle Rare everywhere.
Yeah,
we'll and they were like, we'd pay $50 a bottle for Buffalo Trace. Really? But so one of the guys comes back and he goes, man, I got something great. And I was like, oh, really? What'd you get? Very old Barton. And I'm like, it's good. It's good sipping.
Sure.
And he was amazed that he had found it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what do y'all have in your – because I hadn't – he goes, oh, we've got plenty of Jack and Jim and Crown and all the other –
Man, I used to sell Very Old Barton in the beginning of my career as a liquor side of things. And it was another one like we were talking about a minute ago.
It was one move.
You couldn't give away Old Granddad or, you know, Mellow Corn or any of these things. They were just things that kind of sat there. Was it 1792?
Yeah.
I have bottles of that from samples.
That place shuttered. Yeah.
And, well, yeah. But at that point when I was selling it, it was hard to get that into a bar. I mean, it was real hard to get that into a bar because they're like, well, you know, we already have all the standards at that point. And it was big name. And this is when I guess you'd say the vodka trend was kind of hot and heavy. You know, we had just picked up Pinnacle at the company I was working for. And so we were pushing 35 different flavors of vodka at the time. And that's what the industry was. I mean, whiskey wasn't wasn't all it is now. I mean, there was always been whiskey heads, but it was never to this point where whiskey is the dominant force. Vodka was at the time.
Well, I think you could still make the argument that I think vodka still is the dominant force, yeah, sales-wise.
It is, but you don't have – from my end of things, you don't have retailers and bars and restaurants going looking crazy for vodkas. They're not like, hey, what's the coolest new flavor?
They're also not super
vodka
allocated though.
Yeah.
So I know like Tito's goes through I was talking to a store up north. They said they go through like 100 cases a week or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, but Tito's is the number one selling SKU in the state. So you can't really compare that to what the rest of the trend in that category is doing.
Fair enough.
Because before it was Crown Royal. Crown Royal was the one of the largest brands out there. And it's in the whiskey, Canadian whiskey category. But it's the only thing that really sold in huge, huge quantities in Canadian whiskey category. In my opinion.
No, you're right. I don't disagree with you.
And so you can't look at one single product that's the largest SKU almost nationwide at this point and say it's driving the trend of that category. I don't think.
Well, I just – in my opinion, even if something is not as popular as I just drew a blank. What's the name of the vodka we're talking about?
Tito's.
Even if something's not as popular, I still think that vodka in general moves a little bit quicker. It's cheap. It's readily available. Now, you're right. There's not this massive demand. There's not this massive following. It's mostly bars. It's mostly college students.
Well, because if you look at from my side of the industry, you go in to present to a retail chain, independents, whatever. They're not looking to expand their vodka category. If anything, they're trying to slim that up so they can put more shelf space for their whiskeys. Because that's what's selling. I mean, people go walk in the store, they grab their bottle of vodka on the way to the whiskey aisle type situation.
Right.
Because that's the cool new thing that everyone wants to grab. And it's where can I find more shelf space to put all these new whiskeys that are coming on board?
Four facings of vodka. Well, yeah.
So do you think, and I'm seeing more of it, some of the flavored whiskeys that keep popping in and out, do you think that's
a downward trend.
Is it
that's
going not, down?
That's happening less and
well,
less.
Well, I mean, I've seen Crown come out, you know, in the last couple of years, the vanilla, the apple.
Well, because and some the apple kills it. The apple went on allocation. It came out during what we call OND, October, November, December, and you couldn't find it on shelves anywhere. Yeah. I mean, apple was the thing. But like we're talking about in vodka, just because one product necessarily sells in a category doesn't mean the whole category is right. driving that manner.
I think we went
manner.
From vodka to flavored vodkas. Okay. To flavored whiskeys to whiskey. And I think you're still going to see new vodkas come out, but it's another vodka. Nothing special about it.
And at this
point, you're still going to see some flavored whiskeys come out.
At this point, what flavor do you do that hasn't been done?
Yeah.
Too?
It's a done to death.
Well, it's funny because I was listening to one of your other podcasts and you're saying, I heard you say something about glazed donut.
Glazed donut, yeah.
There's one even worse. There's a menthol vodka out in the market.
That sounds horrible. It's basically mouthwash.
Yeah.
Tobacco mouthwash. So it kind of falls in with your cigars.
Well, you know, cigar flavored vodka.
No, there isn't. There's tobacco flavored vodka.
Yeah, I've seen
I didn't
that.
Know that. Yeah, you know, sure. They put the oak staves in the whiskey bottle. Yeah. Just throw a cigar in a vodka bottle and let it sit there like tea.
But you know, on the cigar side, a lot of people start their journey in cigars with the flavored stuff.
Sure.
One of our best friends, Jason, you know, that's how him and Jen got started. He came in and they did a
League
of Cats
league.
Yeah,
Jason, she's way out of your league, buddy.
Yeah, you're.
But see, I think the flavors is what helps people ease into the harsh reality of what some of this stuff is.
Like right, and
someone who's never smoked a cigar is intense.
Yeah,
someone who's never had 120 proof bourbon.
Yeah,
that's intense.
It's
for
the
them.
Same progression there. Most people start off with the 80 proof whiskeys, and they do it with Coke. Then they go to ice. Then they go straight, and then they go up the.
Are
up
you
the proof.
Are you directly looking at me, Gene and Jason, when you say this?
Our little group when we started a couple years ago in the cigar lounge, it was that progression, and then
whiskey
you get
and
into
Coke
the,
and...
yeah. I mean, the guys are drinking Caribbean Cask Balvenie, which is fantastic. It's a great introduction to the category. And then they were doing ice, and then we would get rid of the ice, and now they're drinking straight. And then they're like, "I don't like it, 120 proof." 6 months later, they don't like it 80 proof. Like
I mean, it's funny you mention this because I was talking to one of my rum producers last night at dinner, and they have a vintage stated rum, right? And it's delicious. It's amazing. It's, you know, I think on the retail shelf, like 80 or 90.
Who's this?
Diplomatico.
Okay.
And it's a great rum for what it is. And we were looking through something and someone had put, you know, a twist of a lime and ice on it. And they're like, I can't believe they're doing that. Blah, blah, blah. Well, they're drinking your product.
Yeah.
So regardless, someone's trying your product.
They felt it was being bastardized.
Somewhat. Yeah. And there's a lot of purists out there that are, you have to drink it this way. Why? Why? I mean, Mark Schilling said it best. Just drink it. If you like it, just drink it.
Did you listen to that episode?
I've listened to several of them so far.
Mark was a fun interview.
Well, so I've dealt with Mark through my dealings in business in the past. You know, he was part owner of one of the brands that I distribute.
Ben Milam?
Austin Reserve, Jim.
I was going to say Treaty Oak, sorry.
And so they've done some cool stuff because they were doing barrel editions. So they've done a wonderful little job with their gin out of Austin. So I've dealt with him in the past, and he's one that I like to call. And, you know, as I'm driving all over the state, bounce off a lot of ideas from because he's very, very knowledgeable. I mean, from his podcast, he knows quite a bit about this industry, about the legality side of it, which is a mystery to almost everyone in this industry. Like you talked about who was with, I guess, Will, that you all were talking about kind of labels and stuff like that.
Sure.
There's no definitive answer to a lot of our questions. So we all kind of have to bounce ideas off of each other to find out what's going on, what's legal, what's not.
That's essentially what the problem is with this industry is there's no one to simply confer. It's imagine taking a test and answering questions and citing, like, here's your study material, here's your questions. Question is this, you check it and you think, okay, I've got the answer. And then no one grades your paper.
Yeah.
It's essentially what happens. The TTB, there's no like hotline that you can call and say, hey, I want to do this. Is this legal? You simply have to research it yourself, do it, submit it, assume that the person approving it is knowledgeable, and and then eventually a Wade will call you out on it. And then you've got to fix it again. So it's this weird thing where it's very regulated, but not helpful.
It's the problem in this industry in general. It's growing so fast that they're hiring people that they just need a warm body to fill a role to do the job.
Sure.
That they don't necessarily have the background and knowledge of every single one of these products. So, for instance, and I know we talk about mainly, you know, aged products here, but I was down in Mexico recently in Oaxaca visiting one of my mezcal distilleries, and they have what's called the CRM there. It's the regulatory body over the mezcal industry. And they're so short-staffed right now that you can't get mezcal over the border because they have to approve every batch that goes through. Well, they have like 5 people, and there's over 300 distilleries down there, and they have to visit them once a week. And so you tell me the math, how that's possible. Oh, wow. It's not. Yeah. And these guys they're testing every single batch of mezcal that you're producing. And if you're producing, you know, 15 different mezcals, they're having to test all this stuff, and it's quite difficult.
Break or keep going?
Yeah, let's take a break.
Okay, well, sorry, guys. We'll be right back after. Don't lose where you were at.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
So, I mean, it's a problem with every regulatory body as this industry grows as fast as it is in a way, there's not enough time for these people to hire quality people that know everything about every part of this industry to be able to do their job the best way possible. I mean, the CRM is just a small example of the rest of the industry. I mean, the TTB, who regulates the whole United States, the TABC, who regulates Texas, they're all inundated with 100 different COLAs, label approvals. A COLA, for people that don't know, is your national label approval that Wade, I think, is the one who stops people all the time on.
Yeah, but he also uses Nubis, the Texas version of
that. Yeah, well, Nubis is what the label approvals go through for Texas, through the TABC. So once in the U.S., and my background is Texas. So once you get COLA approvals in Texas, you still have to get an actual label approval COLA approvals in the United States.
You gotta
still get a Texas label approval.
So COLA is certificate of label approval, I think. You know, quote me on that. Yes. And you submit it to the TTB, and the TTB has all these requirements as to what goes on the front of a bottle, bourbon per se, or the back of the bottle. And then some worker bee sees it, and they say, okay, that covers that, covers that. And they'll officially classify it as a bourbon or a whiskey specialty for the label approval, and which has been it's been part of the hot debate of Jack Daniels, because Jack Daniels, their label approval was approved as bourbon, and a lot of people find that controversial. And then once you get TTB label approval, it then has to go through Texas label approval. And that's part of the reason why, for instance, when was Delilah's released to other states?
It was all released right around the same time. Let's just say we all ordered in June, and it was supposed to be released nationally July 1st.
So then this is the exception to the rule, because, or maybe not the exception to the rule, but what a lot of big releases specifically like I'm trying to think of an example here, but a lot of times stuff will be released and it gets all of the U.S. before it gets to Texas. Texas is delayed almost perpetually. A great example is Lafroig Karchus. Lafroig Karchus, peated whiskey last year, was released sometime in the middle of the year. We didn't see it till November or December. But
you realize that there's, coming from my background, there's a lot of cogs in that wheel for the reason why or why not.
Sure.
It could have done that.
Agreed. And I'll be honest with you, we did. I designed a label for our Whitmire's barrel. It was submitted to TTB, and we got that all wrapped up and done in 30 days.
100%.
And mostly because it was denied three times before so we had to tweak it each time.
But see, once it gets through TTB colas, generally Texas is just a stamp of approval and it's gone. And so Texas is fairly fast. I mean, it's not bad.
Our Four Roses Al Young release was delayed. We didn't get it until well after the rest of the
season. Were they hit because they didn't do something label-wise that it made a slip through the TTB?
I don't know. I don't work for Four Roses, I do know that there's a lot of major releases that get held up, and Texas sees it long before. A great example is Foursquare. And Pierre Ferrand yesterday, when we talked to him about his special releases, there is a rum release that they do called their Plantation Extreme. It's their cash strength, like bomb of a release of their rum. And Europe gets it immediately. And by the time it gets through all of our label approvals and gets released, it's already sold out everywhere else. So why even bother with Texas? That's why Texas gets kind of robbed in some
areas. And then you got to realize a lot of these importer suppliers, the way it works is they have, you know, a group of people that do all their compliance work for them. They do the national TTB colas, and then they're plugging in each state by state all the label approvals that they need. Sometimes it's just because Texas falls so low on that list that that's when it goes through, is by the time they get down their alphabetical list of the states it needs to go into, possibly. Or sometimes it's just someone forgot and didn't turn it in. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things that can go wrong between the fact of making a product, how fast the label approval process goes, to when the product actually hits a shelf.
I'm going to Alabama to start getting all the new releases.
Yeah, I mean, I know people who, like, for instance, I won't say his name, but a local guy drove to Louisiana to pick up something because he couldn't get it here.
For sure.
And picked up a lot of it. So it's this – that's how crazy this hobby is right now, that people are willing to go on road trips to get what they need, which is such a sign of the times.
Oh, I mean, I know people that mule stuff back from Europe and stuff all the time. It's legal to bring a couple of bottles back with you. And so, you know, hey, is someone going to France because I want a bottle of this? Or is someone going to, you know, South America or whatever? I'm just as guilty of it because there's a lot of cool stuff over there that we don't get.
Let's do the next pour.
I know we wanted to. There was a conversation that kind of went on about allocations earlier before we started this thing. And that kind of brings up the point of this brand. So this is barrel bourbon. This is actually batch 11. So this is what I call, I guess, last year's Henry McKenna.
It won a bunch of awards last year. And it became so hard to find that it was all gone.
Well, and there's kind of a funny story about that, actually. In Will Stragas, which you had recently on one of your podcasts, he laughs about it now, but at the time he wasn't too happy. So, you know, I had this product in warehouse before the actual award came out, and it had already been in market for several months, actually. And I get an email from one of my sales reps just basically saying, hey, I have an account that wants, you know, 10 cases of batch 11.
NASA liquor?
No, it was actually up in DFW. And I'm like, yeah, sure, go ahead, sell it to him. Like, no big deal, whatever. And 2 days later, Will calls me and is like, why did you let some of this go to one account? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, did you not see my email? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, it just won best bourbon and best small batch bourbon in San Francisco tasting. I'm like, no way. And so it was my little, you know, inundation with too many supplier emails at the time that I let one slip through the cracks, and someone got a decent chunk of what we had left of batch 11 right when it won one of the best awards out there. But at the time, it was just another release from barrel, so it wasn't anything necessarily special in the market. It's just when some tasting award company deems it the best bourbon that
people go nuts.
Yeah, and you know, it's not like I was trying to hold it back from anyone way before that. It was just people weren't purchasing it for what it was, and then all of a sudden it becomes something. It's just there's a friend of mine who works in the industry for one of the retailers up in Dallas, and we joke about the fact that we remember when you could walk into when Total Wine first just came here, or Specs or Siegel's or any of those guys, and see bottles of Pappy on the shelf. I mean, when it would come out, it'd just be sitting on the shelf. And it was because it wasn't the big deal back then.
Yeah.
Like we talked about earlier, you know, some of these brands that everyone covets now were just everyday things back then.
Yeah.
And now it's become such a hot topic that everyone's like, I need this, I need that, I need this. And it's simply because A, people hoard it, and B, because everyone wants what they can't have.
Fear of missing out.
Yep. 100%. But I mean, I know so many people that have bottles of Pappy now because there's, you know, they have to keep releasing a little bit more to keep the general populace happy.
So you mentioned two things right now, two specific words. You said the word Pappy.
Mm-hmm.
And you said the word allocation.
Well, Pappy is the hottest one because that's the one everyone wants.
Sure. Well, Pappy, BTAC, Buffalo Trace Antique Collection. Let's get into the subject of how allocations work, what the way they legally should work, and I'm sure is the policy of every distributor out there.
I can give it to you from my background. So I don't sell Pappy. I don't sell Buffalo Trace. I don't sell any of the big ones. So I have a smaller understanding of what's quote unquote allocation because I sell very few brands that are so highly sought after. I mean, I sell really cool, unique products. And this barrel batch 11 was kind of the most sought after it hit an award. But by that time I had so little of it that it wasn't worth, you know, pushing people around for it. It was just like, you know, you've supported us in the past. Here you go.
I think, and before we get into the subject, you've got a little bottle peeking behind the camera. Can't really see it, but that rum JM is going to be in the rum world. We talked about a few rums that people love to talk about. Foursquare, Barrel did a rum. Rum JM is up there with just a solid quality, interesting, funky, wide variety. They got several vintages. I hold on to that as long as possible, because when the time finally comes, that's going to be hard to get.
Well, and rums we'll get into because I know you're a big rum head after whiskey and Armagnac, and I'm rum holds a special place in my heart, so we'll get into that. But you know, to your point on allocations, my complete understanding from my perspective, and like I said, this is just my perspective. I don't want anyone getting mad at me about this. Is you technically can't allocate anything to some one individual store because it's. From my whole knowledge, it's illegal to say, you get this, you get this, you can't get anything because you haven't purchased any of this.
Right.
If you have it in your warehouse, you should be able to sell it to any customer asking
that asks
for it.
Yeah.
And that's saying you have it in your warehouse because you got to realize some of these things come in and I've already had commitments from everyone and their mother that wants it. And so, you know, they've already said, I'll take a case of this, take a case of this, take a case of this, take a case. It's Delilah's. I mean, I had it sold before it even landed.
So this kind of brings up a couple things. So allocations, hold on here, allocations, inducements, which we'll get into in a second, and something as that many people have heard of called the specs exclusive. So as you just said, it's technically illegal to basically tell a customer, no, you can't have this. But I'm going to sell X amount of cases to this store, X amount of cases to this store, based off those stores, let's say annual sales, right? So
yeah.
Every month, depending on the distributor, a lot of times they'll have focus items, right? So we want to move. This is our focus item this month. We want to push this as hard as possible. And there's reward systems in place for salesmen or, you know, whatever. So those salesmen go to the stores and they say, all right, you know, it's technically illegal for the salesman to say, this is my focus item. If you bring in 8 cases, I'll give you 2 bottles of Pappy. Or we're using Pappy as an example. This is an RNDC is Pappy's distributor. Pappy's just an example. I'm not saying that RNDC is guilty of this. I'm not saying that any distributor specifically is guilty of this.
No,
we're just going to talk about something that happens, stuff that shouldn't happen, and the workarounds of reality. So they go into the store. They say, you bring in X amount of cases of this. I'll give you 2 bottles of George T. Stack or Pappy.
But see, here's the thing. Is you can't control what happens from the top end. You have a product in your warehouse. You give a directive. They go sell it. That's ultimately, we're a middleman to get things from point A to point B to sell it. That's what we're here for.
I want to touch on something you just said there too, but let me back up a second. So the idea, I'm going to put a flag on the idea of a distributor being the selling aspect of things. So technically what I just said was illegal. You can't say, I'll give you this if you want this, or you have to buy this in order to get this. That's an inducement. That's illegal in the state of Texas. However, what happens often is, you know, let's say Pappy comes in the fall. I feel like I'm going to piss R&DC off. So let's switch it up. Let's just say, you know,
item A,
buck eight. We'll do the item A. I'm tired of being highly allocated buck eight. Yeah. So let's just say item A. You can go into a store and you can say, you know, this is my focus sign this month. If you guys will bring in this much, I'll keep that in mind when my item A gets in the fall. And, you know, you're not necessarily telling them they have to buy this in order to get this, but you're basically saying that I'll keep you in mind when those allocations do come in so that, you know, your store will get it above anyone else. You're saying it without saying it. Technically, you may not be breaking the law, and that is very common, and many people would argue there's nothing wrong with that. Sorry.
No, you're good.
But this is what happens. And the problem is again, that may not even be the directive of, let's say, the head of a division. So a lot of distributors have divisions. You've got Transatlantic or Genesis, and those are Southern Glazer's divisions, but I'm not saying Southern Glazer's is guilty of anything. But those heads of those divisions who have a team of people that work under them, will that won't even be their mission. They'll tell them, don't do that. But you have these rogue salesmen who will go in and kind of twist the arm of a store. I know for a fact, the example I gave happened recently with a certain vodka, where they were told, if you bring in 7 cases of vodka, I'll give you 2 of item A. And so that store brought in 7 cases of vodka and got 2 of item A. And it wasn't the only store that went through that. So,
when it all boils down to it, like I said earlier, everyone wants the one thing that they can't have. It's not just on the middleman level. It's every level. You know, there's consumers that walk in the door that haven't purchased from a retail location ever in their entire life. And they come in there and they want to find a bottle of item A allocated.
I agree with that completely.
And so that retailer is going to be like, no, I have consumers that buy here and they buy thousands of dollars worth of booze from me every single week. Why am I going to sell you this when you're not my customer on a regular basis? You're shopping at all of my competitors.
You know what the difference is there?
What is it?
And it's just my opinion. I get the comparison you're making, but with a store and a distributor, they don't have any other choice. For that product, they have to go to that distributor. Whereas as a consumer, I can just go to a different liquor store. Right. Mm-hmm. So the difference being that the store owner has the legal and moral free will to sell to who he wants. Mm-hmm. Whereas they don't have a choice. They have to go to that sales rep or that distributor in order to get this product. So their hands are already tied, legally speaking, from a store standpoint because of the way our three-tier system works. So that is where I think...
Well, so that leads into a question on my end, though. So I've always wondered, because I know in HBS before this podcast, there was a small post about how you were going to have a distributor on here. And it was like burn the house down, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've never understood why there's so much pushback into the middle tier of the three-tier system. Like, we're this hidden bad guy, essentially, behind a curtain.
Well, just for the record, no. I posted that to be funny.
No, I get it.
We're friends. I would never paint you into a corner.
100%.
And this is pre-recorded. I told him before, we can cut out anything he wants. So what I wanted to do is you know, I want listeners.
that was my biggest question because, like I told you, I've been – my entire career, I've been a –
a bad guy.
No, I've been in the industry.
You kind of look like a bad guy, to be fair. You look like
bald head and the beard, right? Yeah. I've been a non-consumer in the industry. You know, I've always been on the backside of this industry. And so I've never been a consumer to be like, well, they're holding this, they're doing that. I don't understand why people sometimes, not saying all the time, paint a bad picture around the middle tier.
So I can answer that question too. And it's because of, first of all, you set a precedence when you're being forced to buy from somebody.
Okay.
So you're already kind of against the wall.
But you realize not every state is just like this one. Though,
right. Yeah, but I'm only speaking for Texas.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. So, and then you have, I told you I put a bookmark into something. Mm-hmm. You said earlier that you're essentially a pass-through to sell products. I've sat down with brands, mm-hmm. And the brands have told me
that distributors don't sell their products.
That's correct.
Yes. We hear that a lot.
Yeah. So that a distributor set them down and basically said, it's not my job to sell your product. It's my job to take orders of your product. And that's just simply not illogical, but it just seems counterintuitive because you do get all these incentives as reps at the very bottom level of the tier, or not the tier, but from the distributor standpoint, these reps are given incentives to move certain amounts of product. Mm-hmm. And I don't know which distributor said this. This brand told me that they were told
100%.
Yeah. So
there's a lot of talk of that in the industry. I mean, I've sat in industry forums and there's someone who I won't name. The first thing out of their mouth was distribution has changed. You now have to go sell your own product. I would very smallly agree with that, but in a larger case, I would disagree with that. Those guys still every day have to go sell something.
Sure.
Because we all have a competitor out there.
Do they have quotas?
No. Well, it depends.
Quotas?
It depends. Some people, yes. Some people, no.
I know for an example.
Not every distributor is the same.
That's sure.
The thing. You can't paint a picture of this is your cookie cutter distributor.
I know that some distributors, their Christmas bonuses were tied to moving a certain river named product. So you see that thing. And again.
That's why it was everywhere.
You're being painted as the bad guy because you're not. It's not just the liquor stores. The brands are being forced to sell to you.
Okay, so, but let me throw something back at you. So, if we're so bad, and you just take us out of the picture altogether, sure. Right? Every one of these small craft, cool little brands that we all love to drink and partake in, they don't have the means to get all of their product to 1,600 accounts in one state, let alone the whole United States.
I 100% agree with you because it works well locally on the beer market side because they're local. They can literally self-distribute.
100%.
But for these cool rums that would never make their way to Texas if it wasn't for you guys, I get it. But that's like saying with – what's that old Spider-Man saying? With great power comes great – everybody, all at once. comes great responsibility. You're right. If it wasn't for what you are doing – places that have these beautiful selections like NASA Liquor or Anvil in Houston or Poison Girl, they wouldn't have access to those products to be the great whiskey bars that they are. Totally get it. But does that give you the right?
No. And no one said it does.
Right.
But I think that, you know, you said it best, or someone did in one of your podcasts. They're like, you know, there's great people that work at these companies. They're family people.
Sure.
Some of them come from the supplier side. Some of them come from the bartender side. I have plenty of friends in the distribution world that were bartenders at some of the coolest bars in Texas. And so just because they were the cool guy there and were selling you some cool whiskeys does not make them a bad person now.
Oh, 100%. I agree. We've got to take a quick break, but we're going to jump right back into it. And I don't think anyone's inherently bad, but you've got a culture of certain I was going to say the word inducements, certain arm twisting that happens with some brands. But
you're talking about a very small piece of a large, large puzzle, and it doesn't always happen.
You're
talking about a bad egg here and there. You know what I mean? One bad apple doesn't necessarily always spoil the bunch.
That may be the case in terms of specific salesmen, but I think that it's largely the case with specific brands. There are some brands, like I know – specifically, without burning a bridge too bad, if you want to get a private barrel of a certain brand in your store, you have to carry their entire line. And
I wouldn't put it that way. The way I look at it from our point of view is you need to be at least a supporter. These brands have an everyday product that make their money, that help pay their people and help pay their distilleries.
That's not an unreasonable ask. I agree with
but
you.
But some people want just the cool thing. I mean, like I said, consumers are just as guilty about it. Stores are guilty about it. Distributors are guilty about it. We want to buy just as much of the cool thing as we can without having to necessarily sell a ton of the other stuff as well. But at the end of the day, the everyday products, you know, are what pays people's bills. And so if you're only selling cool stuff, then your brand is no longer just a cool thing anymore.
Right.
I think one of the things.
Speaking of which, let's pour a little Delilah's because it is the new cool thing, I guess you'd say. So this one is quite interesting. I know Karen talked about this one in her podcast. I opened this bottle actually last night when I got down here to Houston, and hadn't known exactly all the blend components of this. So the first thing, I'll let you all taste it first before I start.
Don't forget where you were going.
Oh, I'm not.
Before I start deviating into my thoughts and the product itself.
I drank this last night.
Did you really? Okay. No, so you all have tasted this.
Yeah.
I tasted it on the show with her, but I got to tell you, I opened a fresh bottle last night and I was very happy with it. It's just so light and floral.
And it's funny because I tasted it first, then dropped an ice cube in it to see how it would open up, right? And it has a peatiness to it.
Yeah, there's a light phenolic note to it.
And I was asking her, I was like, is there any peat malt in this blend? She's like, no, not at all. But she's like, the second you dilute it at all, that woodiness turns into a almost a peaty tannic note. And it's quite interesting to try it and see the evolution of what it is just by adding a little water to a product.
And I know 110 seems high, but for Compass Box Special Releases, it's actually very reasonable.
Yeah. And this is one that it came in and Compass Box Releases. So I've only carried Compass Box a year and a half now. We carried it in the past before I was with the company that I'm at now. And we picked the brand back up from another distributor in the state more recently. And, you know, these things, they get expensive. They're small releases. So you're wondering at the very beginning, you're like, man, I hope I can sell all this stuff. You know, and I'm sure that's how some of these brands were when they first started before they became, quote unquote, allocated.
Right.
And now it's to the point, you know, I was buying a small amount, put it that way, in terms of what the brand is. Now I keep asking her after I've already bought my small amount if she's got any more. I mean, I have, and she'll kill me if I tell you what the product is on air, but I have a...
So say it anyway.
No. I'll have a small amount of one of their past releases coming in, real flash of the pan kind of thing. It was another distributor that had been sitting on some stock, and I was begging her and begging her for some old stuff.
I feel like
and,
she may have told me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, And so it's almost not even worth mentioning how much is coming in, but it's, you know, we have a great working relationship with them. And she's like, I know you loved that product and I know, you know, you guys can sell it in a heartbeat. So it's a in and out kind of situation.
That one?
Not the
first. Okay.
We tasted it at the Houston Whiskey Social last year.
It was
an under the table bottle. No.
Oh man, I would have died for circus.
That was actually, we tasted that one when you and me first met.
Yes, at Whiskeys of the World.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, we're talking about Circus. Sorry.
I know for the audio listeners, like, what the hell are they talking about?
It was one of their really cool releases. That one was one that I knew I could sell every drop that we got of it.
Yeah.
Literally did. And it's cool to see these things because they come in and out and they're so fast. And people are just like, man, I want more of that. I want more of that. And they're gone. They're gone basically forever at that point. Unless we find some old dusty bottles in a distributor that just didn't do their job and getting it out there. And then we have the ability to be able to sell something cool. I mean, I got four packs of the Peat Monster cask strength.
Last guess.
No.
Oh, damn it.
I'll tell you later. It was really cool because those were half gallon bottles and they hadn't been out of market for several years at that point. So it was cool to have something a little extra to go show someone.
Those Peat Monster artillery shells?
Yeah, the bottles. Huge ones. Yeah. So we got, I think, 12 of those for the state or something. So it was something super small and it was just, you know, some customers that were huge Peat Monster customers. We just, hey, do you want some of these things? Because some of these people don't even know that these quote unquote, I hate the word allocation. That's not. These small products are even in the market. You know what I mean? They don't know that
there's not enough to go around, which is often what allocated is referring to from at least the consumer standpoint.
Because, and especially I sell smaller niche items. I mean, some of these things, some people have probably never heard of. And so, you know, the nerds of the world, the real aficionados are the ones like, hey, when's it coming out? When's it coming out? And so, you know, I'm not selling as much cases of quote unquote allocated product as other people. I'm selling very, very small amounts.
Yeah. What were you saying about the...
one of the reasons that I think the
move your hand out.
Sorry, the general consumer is so iffy about the distributors. You go into a mom and pop shop and you say, "Hey," and it's around that fall time, and they're looking for product A, B, and Z, and they're like, "No, we don't get that." Really? How, you know, I saw my buddy got some over at this other store 5 blocks away. Well, my distributor won't let me, you know, my salesman won't give it.
But here's the thing. There's so much hearsay in this industry.
Exactly. But
that is part of what's happening is the liquor stores. A lot of people who shop mom and pops become almost genuine friends with these store owners. And the store owners are the ones saying, my distributor sucks. My distributor's this. The whole reason I brought up the shady behavior of inducements is we had a local store complain in the group that they were being forced to buy a mixed case of like Patron chocolate cafe or whatever it is. I don't drink it, so I don't know what it's called. And a bunch of other stuff just to get the Henry McKenna that just won the award. So they're being forced to buy products that they don't want that are just like college.
Well, but let me ask you this. Say you're a store owner and why don't you just keep the stuff for yourself? You know what I mean? Like is it worth the pain and effort that it's going to take to sell 3 cases of something to consumers that are going to tell all their buddies and you're going to get clamoring for this one product and they're not going to buy another thing off your shelf.
Well,
or why don't you just take it home and drink it?
Yeah, but on the flip side of that,
Have to sell it then. Yeah. You still have to buy the crappy product to get the good product.
For sure. But what if you're already some of these things, you're already a purchaser of them because they're name brands. You know what I mean? These are national products that they quote unquote want you to buy normally to get whatever. Like I said, I don't deal in that realm that much, so I can't tell you how some of those do and do not work. But for the most part, these brands are all nationally known. So it's not like they can't put it on the shelf and sell it every day and then they're going to get XYZ. But see,
that's not the point. To be fair, regardless of how fast a product moves, forcing me to buy something that I don't want.
100% is not
so. So you know, it doesn't matter if it was, you know, something that moves, you know, crazy cheap. That's the whole point is inducements are wrong. I get the idea of supporting the brand in the core range. Totally get it. I think, you know, what Beam likes to refer to as their workhorse is the white label. You know, it's their number one selling thing. That's their
money maker. Pays their people to make the cool things.
And they have a marketing budget. Exactly. Period. Yeah.
So, because when you only have such a small limited amount of some of these things, it doesn't pay your bills every day. It just adds a little bit to the cushion of what you need to have.
Sure.
And, you know, the mom and pops are not without fault too, because we have slammed them on HBS for I know it happened to me and to Jason. Local liquor store, Jason and I frequent.
Feel free to say their name. I don't care.
Potter's Liquor in Friendswood.
Here's the thing. So business is business too. Look at the pharmaceutical industry. They're doing the same thing. The guy who had
and he got prosecuted for it
100%. But he did it to the extreme.
Oh,
there's
some people
that are
extreme.
There's some people that are doing it very small amounts where you can't tell.
Yeah, did it fix that?
Well, we'll fix it in the break.
Okay.
And so it's happening in a lot of industries. It's not just this one. This one's just so apparent because it's, I guess, more of a luxury item than a necessity that people are getting pissed off because they're having to pay extra for a luxury item.
Sure. I mean, many people argue, and we can have an argument about something and we can disagree on the facts. I can't argue against your opinion.
100%.
There are some people who believe commercialism is commercialism, meaning if they want to sell that bottle of Pappy for $1,000, that's on them. That's their choice. Someone will buy it.
It's the rules of supply and demand.
Sure. Totally agree. I totally get it. I disagree with it in fundamental aspects because I know that the only reason why that store got that allocation was because I could spend $10,000 at Specs and it would go a lot further than $10,000 at a mom and pop. I'd have to spend $12,000 or $13,000 in a year at a mom and pop. I'm going to them to give them my business and support them. And that's the only reason why they got those bottles. So I think the right thing to do would be to either raffle them off, which NASA does because NASA has an overwhelming amount of local support, so they can't give it to everybody. Mm-hmm. But the store near me, if I'm their number one customer and I'm the only reason why they're getting that allocation, selling it to me at even a more than reasonable markup, even if it was slightly on the high end, it's a way of him saying, hey, thank you for supporting me year round when I know that you don't have to. So he doesn't have to do that, but I think that is what's changed the environment locally and what encourages the community that we have. There's a ton of mom and pop stores locally who have done that, who have said, look, you're my number one customer. They've even done both. They've raffled off half their allocation and called their number one customers for their other allocation. That's how you maintain that business. Mm-hmm. And so there's two differing dogmas on it. Mm-hmm. And I can't disagree if you think that they should be able to do that. But I know that we are at 12 minutes and we've got to take a break. So I'll be right back. So sorry, we had to take a quick break for radio. And but essentially what we were saying was is that there were two essential belief systems in how a retailer should handle it. I think one is a bit, pardon my French, I think one's a bit shitty and under unappreciative of their because mom and pops will argue. And go ahead and let's pour some rum while I say this.
But see, I would be in disagreement because I think business is business and it's going to keep happening no matter how it happens.
Well, mom and pops like to crap all over Total Wine and Specs for
good reason.
Yep. And
they're taking their business.
Taking their business and their but Total Wine and Specs is never gonna charge you secondary rates for those bottles.
No.
Okay. And so you can't have it both ways. You can't be upset at Specs and Total Wine for always being reasonably priced and then winning over people when I've been supporting you all year. And when that rare bottle finally comes out, you don't want to give it to me at a reasonable price. You want to rob me or milk me for it when Specs wouldn't do that. So yeah. It's this, you can't have it both ways feeling. So I think one is shitty. The other one is
well, and on our end, as a distributor, and I've seen pricing from other ones here and there, you know, when it's sitting on an invoice, sitting on someone's counter, but we're not overcharging anyone for what it is. I mean, it's all prices for what it is because we're trying to keep national averages.
Sure.
I mean, so if someone marks it where they're at, we don't have a lot of control in where they're putting it.
And again, that's not y'all's fault at all.
Yeah. No, we have here's our suggested retail. Here's what it's going for nationally. This is where we think you should be. Texas just happens to have great prices on a lot of great products. It is what it is. Thankfully, we live in a great state that doesn't overcharge us for taxes.
There's and I'll say this last thing, and then we have to move on. There are other states like Kentucky, in which I've talked to a few major retailers there, who've said that they appreciate the fact that we have held these stores to an accountable level, because that's how it used to be in Kentucky.
For sure.
But then Kentucky stores, the culture was secondary pricing for those allocated bottles and milking as much as they could. And then they realized that they were losing customers to major chains. And it then became calling those customers, your regulars, when those bottles came in and giving it to them at a reasonable price. That environment changed entirely. And now places like Cork and Bottle, when they do single barrel releases, their record was they released 4 single barrels at one time and sold all 4 barrels in 27 minutes.
It's amazing.
And it's because they've maintained those relationships instead of...
Well, it's funny because I talk – and you hit one of the biggest points that I've ever talked about in this industry is it's all about relationships. Everything we do in this whole entire industry is about your relationships. Without them, none of these products sell. None of these products made it where they were. It's – you know, that's why I was asking the question earlier about the middle tier, because there's so many great people that work in this industry from every single tier. And they're all friends, man. I mean, I'm friends with some great retailers out there that I go see on a regular basis, and they give you a hard time when you don't go by and see them on a regular basis. And I'm friends with other distributors. You know, we all maintain friendships, even though we're quote unquote competitors. And so that's why my biggest question, that's part of the reason I wanted to come on here, is there's no bad people in this industry. There's some people that don't do things the right way, but they're still ultimately good people.
Well, they're also born into an environment of
culture that taught them
how to do so, that this is how things are done. So I get it. I totally get it. And really, I wanted this conversation not as to be a debate against each other, but more or less to kind of pull the curtain back and let people understand how things are done, to kind of think about it themselves. I agree with you. I've got lots of friends and every major distributor that I've developed relationships with over the last few years that are definitely not bad people.
For sure.
You do have a few bad eggs that might do some bad things from time to time, but that's not a reason to paint a broad brush of the entire tier. But you did mention that you had a couple questions you wanted to ask me, and I wanted to give you that opportunity before we run out of time.
We covered some of them. I was just thinking as we were wrapping up that part of it, there was a part that I wanted to kind of discuss that we didn't get to there yet. It's the fact of the overabundance of products in the market. You'd mentioned this on one of your other podcasts, I think with Mark Schilling, and you had talked about someone's desk that was quite full of a lot of products. That's happening a lot now. And it's a good thing and a bad thing. I think it's a conversation you and me had.
Okay, I was referring to you in that note. But I didn't say your name, did I?
No, I don't believe so.
Well, I think I let the cat out of the bag right now.
You know, and that's one thing that I've kind of seen a lot more lately is an overabundance of new products.
Sure.
And it's something that no one's really talking about because, you know, we're all driving this because we're all looking for new cool things. And you know, someone hit on it the other day that there's a lot of whiskey that are in a lot of the same packages, but they're changing them ever so slightly to be their own. I think that's kind of a conversation that doesn't get talked about as much, is the amount of distilleries that are opening, the amount of products that are out there, and the amount of people that are actually purchasing or not purchasing these products.
I think we're definitely trending in the realm of saturation. Mm-hmm. But I try to compare us to the beer market, and right now, beer is arguably saturated, but still doing very well. So
if you look at craft spirits is 3% of the overall market share. And when I'm defining craft, I'm defining small distilleries that aren't owned by the big 10, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
Conglomerates, they're a very, very small piece of the pie. But if you look at shelf space, they're taking a ton of it because there's a new distillery, and even in the state of Texas alone, there's like a new one every month. It's an overabundance.
New ones opening in Houston and over the next couple of years.
For sure. I mean, it's an overabundance of products.
Yeah, and there's a
finite. I'm sure you see it in your industry.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. In ours, there's a finite amount of shelf space. 100%. You know, either somebody's got to go or somebody's got to get shrunk down for you to get your new product in there, and you want your product, so you're going to give them every reason in the world to put yours in. And well, how is XYZ selling for you? You know, is it doing? Maybe we could,
especially with Nicaragua right now.
Yeah, that's good.
And this is a conversation I really wanted to bring to the forefront. I mean, I know you allocation was a big thing for you, but unfortunately, I can't speak to a lot of that because most of my products are still those small fledgling brands are trying to get to that point. And so that's a difficult point. If there's so much out there and we're all trying to sell it, we're all trying to grab shelf space, you know, and everyone wants to find the new cool thing, but sometimes they're not purchasing it.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
So is it advantageous because me as a consumer, it's not advantageous to me. Maybe it's because I know about the brand, but let's say you go into one of the big chains, I won't mention the name, and they have a certain whiskey on the shelf that is spiffed. And their guys are going to
– for those who don't know what spiffed means.
They're getting
an incentive
incentive to sell it, usually in a dollar or whatever per extra bottle. And they'll have – so you're walking down the whiskey aisle and there's a 1.75 and then two facings of 750. And you go further down the shelf.
For those who don't know what facings are, it's where you have two of the same brands next to each other on the shelf. They're facing you.
And then you go further down the aisle and there's – 4 or 5 more facings of the exact same product that were 30 bottles down.
Are they different whiskey? Because now they're, if you look in the whiskey category,
big box you're talking about,
they're
now.
Separating.
You probably know which.
They're separating Americans, bourbons, ryes, all that kind of stuff. So if it's the same brand, it's because they have different categories. I know what you're talking about too.
Okay. But, you know, and you go in and you go down the main aisle.
That's a deep rabbit hole we can get
down. Yeah. I mean, and I don't understand why. Why try and force me with 7, 8, 9 facings of the exact same product?
Well, it also builds – you've talked about the billboard effect, the whole idea of having facings. You know, if I make 5 whiskeys, I want them on the shelf all next to each other. That creates a large grabbing footprint.
Sure.
If you have your whiskey all over the store, it's going to – everyone's going to know what that is. Everyone's heard of that whiskey. Everyone has heard of that whiskey.
Of course.
And I've talked about it on the show before.
It's garbage.
So it's you build, it's your moneymaker, it's your workhorse, and you build brand recognition. You build a footprint for your store of that specific product.
But why do it with a shitty product?
Because you make a lot of money on it.
Instead of.
And honestly, shitty product may be the case for.
For you.
Are we cussing too much? it may be for you, but there's a lot of people who – it's a big seller.
Like we talked about earlier when it comes to the flavors, there's a customer for all this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, there's a reason that this stuff's on the market. There's plenty of brands that have come and gone, even from the big suppliers.
Yeah, I mean
– They throw spaghetti on the wall is the best way to put it and see what sticks.
Yeah, and that specific product's audience is 22 years old and takes a lot of selfies.
because you as a consumer can afford an $89 bottle of bourbon – doesn't mean the entry-level guy who's just now trying things can afford something in that category. So he might buy something that you quote-unquote deem as shitty whiskey, but to him, it's the best thing that he can afford.
God, there's better stuff on the market that's cheaper.
And that's where all this transparency on the internet does help because
True.
It helps people get educated.
Yeah.
Podcasts like this help people get educated. it's all about the education of the consumer. Because that's the biggest thing.
I just want to rant and drink and do it on camera. Is that so much to ask?
You just what?
I just want to rant and drink.
That's kind of what we all want to do, realistically.
So to answer your question in regards to saturation, I think what we will see is the big brands changing to do more, let's say, specialized releases. I think bourbon's going to eventually overprice itself or outprice itself.
Starting to.
They say there's a bourbon bubble. I don't think there's a bourbon bubble. By definition,
I don't think there is, but I'm going to interject something, kind of spin the topic here. You talk about rum a lot, and I'm a big rum advocate, and I tell a lot of whiskey people, you can buy a lot of really old rum for a really good price.
Which is what absolutely. I was getting to. Yeah. So that's what I was saying is that I think bourbon's going to outprice itself. It's never going to collapse because it is it's not artificially inflated. No. I think they're going to continue to release like $140 special
and people
releases.
People continue to buy them.
They're buying
to a point.
Yes.
I think because there are some $140 special releases that I no longer care about, and I'm not going to mention any specific names, but there are some annual releases that come out of certain bourbons that most people I know aren't really buying it at this level of the hobby. I think what will end up happening is people are going to be forced to go outside the category
and
rums and these Armagnacs. Mm-hmm. We're having a 30-year-old Armagnac come in that's going to be barely over $100. That is insane. 30-year-old mm-hmm. bourbon, not that anyone would want to drink it, is not going to – you know what I mean? So I think what's going to happen is a lot of these small guys are going to go away.
Yeah.
There's a lot of – guys,
I think you're seeing that happen somewhat already.
Sure. I can mention a brand right now, Defiant, who's struggling in this market. They,
I know what you're talking about.
As a small craft distillery, maybe, you know, America Bourbon is not doing too great. There's a new one. The guy's got the license plate on the side of the bottle.
Oh, yeah. Oh. He's a bottled bourbon. Yeah. You're talking about, yeah.
Airship guy.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of guys who want to start their own distillery, but they're going about the wrong way that when eventually they're going to be forced out. So I get it. We're running out of time. We got to go. I think we're going to see a shrinkage on the craft stuff.
100%.
The good craft stuff's not going anywhere. I think it's going to be found. It's going to be bought.
It needs more consumer base. It needs more people buying outside of the big names.
But
spirits is very driven by name brand.
The Houston Bourbon Society
has 100% backing that, yes.
And not only that, we're not just doing bourbon. We're branching out of our comfort zone.
But they need to help educate their friends and family and other consumers.
Well, and you know, trying to make Casey Sue happy with gin. I mean, you know.
Casey doesn't listen.
He will listen.
Yeah, so say whatever you want about it. Yeah. So with that being said, thank you so much for coming on. I want to have you back. I'd like to do a super long episode, one that goes straight to iTunes, hour and a half, 2 hours, because I could keep going, but we're kind of back to back on another recording. So we're going to have to go. But Alan, thank you so much for being here.
Of course, brother.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, man.
We're going to be spending the day together. Awesome. This was a lot of fun. Yeah. I'm excited. So cheers, guys. Thanks.
Cheers.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.